Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You once again, I'm locked up in memory, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2735. That's 2735. And tonight we have a wonderful guest. I just spoke to her briefly and explained to her how the show works and so forth. And I see that our founder is on tonight also as well. And so tonight we do have a guest, and I'm glad she's here. So anyway, I'm going to first read the mission statement and talk a little bit about that, and then get to our guest. Okay, and the number here, by the way, is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And call and be a part of the panel. You can ask questions. You can listen to this wonderful story. I have her bio in front of me. And you can make comments and so forth. Okay, the mission statement is as such. We have a singleness of purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. One is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. And number two is offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. So, I'm very strong with the prevention, but they're all very important: prevention, intervention, and recovery. And I just want you to know that I, too, am a survivor. I'm Carol Levine. I am, you know, vice president of NASCA, and I had a horrific life, just like this young lady right in front of me here. I'm looking at her bio. And let me tell you something. With the right people, the right therapist, you can heal, absolutely. Okay, you absolutely can. You have to do the work, but you can heal. So, all right, first of all, her name is Nikita Bacote, and she is from Florence, South Carolina, and she was in the foster care system. Let me bring on my the founder, Bill Murray. Okay. Okay, and her goal now is to give a voice to those who had none. And, boy, a lot of us know about that, okay, having no voice. Some of us have a big voice like me, but it went nowhere. But anyway, Nikita, I want to thank you so much for, you know, being here tonight. And you know, for a while we were having some problems with Blog Talk and all kinds of things, all the things going on. So, but you are here, and I'm just delighted to have you on this show. I have read your bio completely, and you do have quite a story to tell. So now there's two of us who are going to be able to speak to you. And again, I'm going to give out the number. It's 646-595-2118. That is 646-595-2118. And NASCA people, call in if you can. And those of you who are just listening, have never been on the show before, call in. You can listen, or you can push the number one and be a part of the panel. Okay? Okay. Now, I'm hearing a little bit of background noise here. I want to ask you something. Nikita, did you have your speakerphone on or something?
No. Nothing is on.
Okay.
Let me close my door.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, we're here. We're waiting for you to say something.
Oh. Well, I never run out of things to say, Bill. You know this.
Well, that's why I was so surprised.
He's so fresh, isn't he? Okay. So, Nikita, why don't you start from the beginning and tell your story. And remember, you have 90 minutes, okay? So you don't have to feel rushed. And this is the first time she's been on air, Bill. And, you know, and she's a little bit nervous, but she's doing fine, and she's going to do well. Just, you know, we're going to help you along with this. So go ahead, start out and start telling your story. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me. Like I said, this is my first time being on a radio, so I am honored to be here and be a part of this program tonight. So once again, thank you guys for having me. Yes, so for me, my story really started in birth. My mom, when I found out, was pregnant with me at 8 months, and she tried to jump off a bridge in New York when she jumped out the car with my father. So from there on, it just seemed like everything was going downhill. So when my mother brought us from Florence, South Carolina, to Springfield, Massachusetts, where her sister lived, like I said, she did a lot of dating, different men in and out the house, and, you know, some of them abused us growing up. And when she finally decided to settle down with one guy, which was my stepfather, that's when it all started. Even more, they would, once he would beat on, my mother was getting abused as well. So once he abused her, they abused us. Me and my sister, majority of the time, because my brother was a baby. So they would beat us with anything they could find, extension cords, belts. I'm old. Don't sound my age, but I'm 48. Wiffle bats, I don't know if anybody would remember those. Switches, rulers, broomsticks, and we got shoes thrown at us. I mean, it was a lot of stuff that happened to us. But the majority of the time I remembered, one time she beat me so bad it cut my face with a buckle belt. And, of course, back then you had DSS come through. So they came, but my mother threatened me, and she said, well, if you want to report them, as soon as she leaves, don't worry, I'm going to get you again. So she did. She beat me again. So most of our lives, we just got beat to death. We would beat so badly, we would bleed through our clothes. Now, we was in church, and a lot of people didn't know that because we would hide very well. Or we'll say, oh, you know, we got scratched up. Or she'd be like, you know, what happens in the house stays in the house. So that's what all we knew growing up. So one day when my mom was, you know, got tired of, and he beat, my stepfather beat her to death almost too, she ended up in the mental institution. So that's when we was taken away from her. We was put in foster care. So when we was in foster
care. This woman is being called the date from hell after she allegedly damaged about $1.5 million worth of artwork.
What on earth is that?
I don't know. I thought they...
Will you turn the mic on? Turn it off.
I just, believe me. This is a, hold on a second. That's funny. All right, Nikita, I have a 919 area code here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to turn that mic on, and if that's them blasting in the background, I'm going to tell them to cut it out and see if they want to be a part of the show. Hold on a second.
Lindsay got so drunk on their first date, he called her an Uber to take her home.
Oh, yeah, well, that's the end of that. We're just going to go back and I don't know what he's talking about. Let us continue. He can listen. Go ahead.
That's okay. But, yeah, we was, like I said, when she was getting beat to death. So when he beat her, like I said, they were beat on us. So it finally came to when my mother was getting beat to death that they put her in a mental institution. We went to foster care. Now, the foster care lady that we stayed with, her and her daughter and her son, I want to say 7, and my sister was 6. She would beat us to death because she wanted us, it was like she treated us like her slaves. We couldn't eat until we cleaned up that whole house. She had dogs. We had to clean the dogs and everything. Now, she would do my brother right because he was a baby. But for me and my sister, no, we would get beat to death. And I started peeing in the bed because I was so scared that she would get us and beat us, you know, while we were in the bed. And I've never peed in the bed before. So that's when I started. So one time we was eating dinner, and the food she cooked, I swear, the dogs ate better than us. So she threatened to beat me if I didn't eat that food, and I ended up vomiting in my own mouth and ended up eating my own vomit because I didn't want to get no more beatings. So she would tell us, you know, when the caseworker came, you better not tell her what's going on or I'm going to beat you again. So, you know, you're young, you're scared, you don't want to continue to get beatings, you know, because we was already getting like that at home. So me and my sister made a pact one night that we was going to tell because we was ready to go. I didn't care where they took us, but we had to get out that house. So when she came to get us, finally, she said, well, you're going home now because your mother did her treatment and whatever she needed to do. You guys can go home now. We really didn't want to go home because we knew that was going to get beat again. So we didn't have no choice. We'd rather be there than here with this lady, you know. So we end up back in home. And during that time, my stepfather let his son move in with us. So my stepbrother was 12, and I was 8. And they were gone. So, made long story short, he ended up molesting me. So when I told my mother, and she was like, well, his daddy going to deal with him. So he wants to talk to you in the basement. So we went downstairs and he talked to me. And they did nothing to this boy. All they did was tell him, don't you touch her. That's your sister. You don't ever do that. And I'm like, really? So you're not going to get on her? I mean, like what I said meant nothing. So, you know, for years that went on until I was 16 and my sister was 17. And we was in church. Now, mind you, growing up in church, still nobody knew we was getting beat. Severely beat, and it was so bad I was getting beat upside my head so much that I was losing memory. When I got older, it didn't affect me until I got older that my memory was getting really bad. I couldn't remember things. So that's how bad my mother used to beat us. Well, me, and beat me upside my head and, you know, knock me around. And so when we turned 16, I was 16, my sister was 15. It was the pastor in the church. She noticed something was wrong because we could never go nowhere. My mother would just beat us if people would come by and we would let them in. Now, these are church members. And I understand strangers, but these were people we knew. And she beat me to death because I let one of the church members come in and leave a message. And when she found out that my mother beat me to death, she cried and told the pastor. And so that's when we end up having a meeting. So when we had that meeting, that saved our lives, to be honest, because we shouldn't be here today. The way we were getting beat, no child should ever get beat like that. I mean, to this day, I used to have issues with seeing certain things because I'm thinking somebody's going to hit me or somebody come close, I would flinch a lot. And people would laugh, like, why is she always flinch? What's wrong with her? Because when you get beat so much, you're so used to things happening that you're scared that somebody's going to hit you or the things they say or if they pick a belt. It took me a long time to even wear certain clothing because I'm thinking, you know, remembering the beatings I had so much growing up. So it wasn't nothing but the grace of God of her saving our lives that day in the room when they found out. It was because we was in church and I'm telling my age, when we used to wear stockings. And one day I was bleeding through my stockings, and then when she touched my arm, I had blisters, you know, from the beatings. Because when you get beat with tension cords, those leave marks more really than belts. And so she saw that, and she was like, something's wrong. Why is you flinching? What is wrong? And we couldn't say anything. And because, like, you know, growing up, your parents said what stays in the house happens in the house, stays in the house. So we would never talk about it. So that's when it happened, and she was like, something's not right. So when we had that meeting, the God in her saw what was going on and saved our lives. So after that, you know, getting the counseling, getting the help that we need, and then growing up even more, and I got married, never say never, because I said I'm never going to be in an abusive marriage like my mother. Ended up in an abusive marriage for 14 years.
Okay, let me stop you there, honey, okay? Let me stop you there. We have a 206 area code. I'm going to bring this person on. The other person showed up, too, but I don't know if I want to open that mic. Okay. Okay, area code 206. Who am I speaking to?
Hi, Carol. It's Penelope calling in.
Hi, Penelope. How are you? I'm so glad. I'm so glad that you're here, honey. We have another one here, but I'm not going to try that number. We just say, I think.
No, this is,
I think we'll stay with
the scam. This is the person that was making a mess.
Yeah. Okay. So before you go any further, Nikita, we have Penelope, okay, and she's on the board. She's one of the board members, just like I am, and she's here, and we have also our founder. He also, too, is here. So I just want you to know that you have people to support you, myself included. And, you know, so far what you've told us, you know, is a horrific thing, the beatings that you had to take. And, you know, it's not right. You keep saying, you've said several times that no child should have to go through that, and you're quite right. And then, of course, too, I think you said that your brother had also sexually abused you. Was it your brother?
My stepbrother, yes.
Your stepbrother, right, exactly, okay. And so already you're telling us, you're painting a picture here, you know, of things that happened to a very little girl because it started at such a young age. And so often, many of us, you know, we do marry into the same type of background that we came from. I did it twice. Two times.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's a no-no. Okay, that's a no-no. Let's go back a little bit. Because I need to, because there's a little bit too much background noise. At one point, I think I heard you say that it was, who was it who saw your bruising and the welts on your arm? Was that in church or was that in school?
It was in church. The first time it was in school because I had a cut on my face. And, you know, when you go to school, teachers have to report if they see any abuse. So, my first time was my teacher. The school I was going to, we're not allowed to wear certain materials or clothing or color. So I had a big bandage on my face, and she was like, Nikita, what's going on? I said, oh, nothing, you know, I just cut myself. She was like, no, I need to talk to you. Mm-hmm. So she pulled me to the side, and I told her what happened.
Okay, that's good. At least that was a teacher that that cared enough to even ask. I think I heard you say something about you had stockings on, so that tells you how old you are. I'm not sure. Listen, honey, I'm a lot older than you, so don't worry about that, okay? You know, you don't have to worry about that. And but then with the second time that I was able to hear, what was that? One was school and one was church. And did you get more help in church? You know, let's talk a little bit about that.
Yes, I did. The church that we went to, and we went there for, it was like some years before anybody knew what happened to us. I mean, nobody knew why. Sister Jackson, that was my mother's name at the time, why her children could never play with the kids, why we was always rushed to go home, and why we never wore short sleeve shirts or anything like that, and we always wear stockings and always having a sweater on because we hide the bruises that we were receiving and didn't want to explain, you know, why, what happened to us all the time, because then somebody might get suspicious, you know, what's going on. So it was constantly lying all the time, or not even lying, being quiet, not saying anything because they thought something was wrong with us.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So,
you know,
the pastor and the wife helped us. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And that's what you just said is so true. It's so often an indication, you know, when kids are like wearing long sleeves and it's boiling hot
mm-hmm.
out because they're covering mm-hmm. their bruises and all this other stuff. A lot of people are listening, and they I like to, you know, stop you once in a while and talk about certain
mm-hmm.
things, because there's a lot of people that don't understand child abuse. Now, by your saying that, you might very well have educated someone, and by my saying it also, with the long sleeves and when it's boiling hot, like 95 degrees out, right,
mm-hmm.
and someone's wearing
mm-hmm.
long sleeves, many times there's a reason for that. Okay,
mm-hmm.
so I want Bill to say hello to you, and then I'll bring on Penelope to welcome you to the show. And you're doing a fine job. You don't even sound nervous at all. No, you don't. You're doing fine.
Thank you.
Okay, Bill. Oh, you're doing fine, honey. Go ahead, Bill.
She sounds like an old pro here. You sure?
Yeah, she does.
Thank you.
You're doing very well, and you don't even sound that nervous, which is great. You're allowed to sound nervous, by the way, if you are, and you're allowed to admit it if you are. But
oh, I am.
It's not required, but you're allowed to admit it. All right. So you know, we're all in the same boat, you know, more or less. So we might be, some of us might be a little bit more advanced ahead of you, but we all went through the same experiences at the point, all of us. And there are going to be people who are coming in after you, who, you know, you'll be ahead of at some point, and they'll need to learn what you're going to tell them. But right now, sharing your story for the first time like this is a big deal. And I want you to know, no matter how it goes tonight, this is a big deal, because you are allowing yourself to give away your secret, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our problem, is we keep the secret. So giving it away is a big deal. All right, I do hear some background noise, too. Sounds like somebody's talking on a party line.
I know.
But, yeah, but thank you very much for being with us tonight. And we'll come back and forth.
Oh, thank you.
Talk to you.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, yeah. And Bill, again, he's our founder, you know, of NASCA. And
mm-hmm.
I've been with him for 11 years. Can you imagine that? I had to get even. Okay.
I think that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, we have this relationship, he and I. I love him to death. Okay.
No.
Okay. Okay, let's bring on Penelope. And Penelope, say hi to our guests.
Hi, Nikita. My gosh. Yeah.
Hello.
Hi. I agree with everything Carol and Bill have stated. I mean, you sound very comfortable in telling the truth behind your experience as a child. And I know from my own experience of telling my own story that it can make you feel very nervous, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a gift, I think, because it's built, so we have a lot of people listening in, right, that may be contemplating or at different points in their healing journey. And by you just speaking about your experience, it is very courageous, because you're really helping other people. And I want to let you know that what you said about your teacher, you know, questioning something that she observed or he observed,
mm-hmm.
I can relate to that story. So that's the other thing I want to say. You're not alone. I can relate to that story. Unfortunately, I was also very, very badly physically beaten at home. And unfortunately, that teacher, the second time I came with bruises on my face, she looked at me skeptically. I lied again to see how I did it.
Mm-hmm.
She kind of looked at me like she didn't quite believe me, but she just let it go. So, you know, the fact that your teacher said, I don't think so, I don't know how you feel about that, but gosh, I wish that teacher, when I was 12, had said, I'm not going to let this go. So, you're not alone, and I wanted to say that you're just So hearing you say that, I mean, I can resonate with it, but the fact that there are teachers out there that are willing to just say, you know, I'm not going to let this go. I have a feeling, right? I have a gut feeling. It also gives me hope, right? That from my your experience, you know, that there is hope that, you know, people are starting to become more aware, especially people that are in those reporting type of duties, right, like a teacher or a physician or a coach or a priest or a law enforcement official, to say, to use that and say, you know, I'm going to actually pursue this. So it gives me some hope that that might be, you know, turning. But anyway, I just wanted to say, with what you shared so far, it's been had an incredible impact already, and I really applaud you, and I'm looking forward to hearing the rest, what you have to share.
Yeah.
Thank you
for that, Penelope.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. You bet. I mean, you see, the teachers today, you know, they're mandated reporters, and any teacher that lets something like that go, all right, is today, of course, breaking the law. To me, it was always breaking the law because, first of all, everyone should be a mandated reporter, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, those in charge, if you want to put it that way, like in the school system or, you know, in the churches or wherever you go, you know, people, we need more people to, you know, call in. A lot do call in today.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had the stats on that. But then there's a lot that don't. You know, because you see, child abuse is just so, so big. It doesn't matter whether it's physical, mental, emotional, or sexual, or neglect, all right? Child abuse is child abuse. It's all trauma. And, you know, if we don't get people out there to understand even more, you know, we run radio shows here. A lot of us write books. We have our blogs. We have all different kinds of ways of trying to, you know, to help people and to educate them. So this is a big deal, what you're doing right here, right now, because tonight when the show is over, and then there are people listening right now through their computers, you're showing them the strength that you have now. You see, you're a survivor right now, okay, because as I like to say, you're still standing, and you're doing something big by sharing your story with an awful lot of people. And I want to ask you something. When you went to school, were you able to concentrate? Could you do your studies? Were you able to think?
When you've been through so much like that, it's just a daily routine. You're just used to it. So, yeah, I did. I went to class, did the work, and pretend like nothing was wrong. I put the Band-Aid on, and it wasn't a regular Band-Aid. It was those big white bandages that they put on when you have you got stitches or something covering a wound. It was that big. That's why she said something to me about it. And a friend of mine, I can't remember her name, a good friend of mine, she grabbed my hand and she was like, Nikita, something's wrong. And she took me to the teacher. So if it wasn't for her to take me to the teacher and say anything, she probably would have still been with beat me. I mean, she was going to beat me anyways, but at least somebody knew something. And it got the ball rolling. But back then, caseworkers wasn't into, you know, pursuing as much as some of them are now. We come a long way. We still got a long way to go. But once that caseworker left, I looked at her and I said, you just don't understand, lady. I'm about to get beat again. So thank you for coming, but you just don't know what you just did to me. So I didn't, I mean, that's what I'm saying in my mind. You know, when she came in and I saw my mother's face and I already knew I'm going upstairs, I'm about to get beat up again. So, yes.
What a way to live, huh? To have to worry about being beaten all the time and so forth. I went through a period of time, too, where I was getting beaten an awful lot. And, you know, today it is getting a little bit better, like you mentioned, where people are starting to, you know, to look. Instead of turning away, they are starting to look, you know, at a kid or anyone, whether it be a child or an adult, And, you know, they're starting to, you know, become a little bit more proactive. What we need is for them to become completely proactive. Because, you know, the stats are like 1 in 4 girls will be sexually abused by the time they're 18. And 1 in 5 to 6 boys will be sexually abused by the time they're 18. Mm-hmm. And people don't think about boys, you know what I'm saying? They always are thinking about girls,
no,
so
don't.
It is both. No. With the physical mm-hmm. abuse, that's higher still, all right? There's a lot of physically abused kids out there. So what you're telling us so far is you've had a lot of physical abuse. You came to sort of like just live with it. You feared, you know, well, this is the way that it is. And with the sexual abuse, you felt like you weren't listened to, you weren't heard. Your voice was not heard, nor was mine with my brother. Mm-hmm. My mother said, things like this just happen in families. And that was the end of it. That was the end of the abuse continued,
yeah.
Believe me. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So continue on with your story. Yeah. So
I became a cutter and suicidal for years. I still, you know, have the scars. I try to cut my plenty of places that, you know, of course you're going to hide it and cover it so nobody won't see. I just couldn't take it anymore. I ran away from home multiple times and ended up right back with my mom and my stepfather. I didn't take my sister. Me and my sister became real close with all this going on. And, you know, but I never told about the suicide and cutting myself. And it was nobody but the grace of God. I never cut an artery. I was close to it, but I never did. Because you're ashamed and embarrassed. Like I said, we was in church for years, and nobody knew. And we kept real quiet about it. And but sometimes, you know, the pastor would come like, I'm talking to somebody. I know somebody's trying to hurt themselves. And I'm looking around like, she ain't talking to me. But in my mind, like, yeah, she talking to me. But, you know. She'd be like, don't do it. It's not worth it. But I'm like, in my mind, like, God, why? Why are we being abused so badly? You know, no child should have to go through. Do these people not know what we're going through? And we have to come to church every Sunday, every Tuesday, every Thursday. Nobody knew nothing what was going on. And we would cry all the time. Somebody, please save our life. So that's why someone, when I was 16, that's when our life was saved. And, but the abuse still kept going, not more physically, but getting more mentally and emotionally. They would call us names and, you know, say things to us that shouldn't have been saying to a child. Or even as a preteen growing up, you should be close with your mom. You should have a relationship with your parents. Never had that. Never heard, I love you. Never got a hug. Even if you did, we got more in trouble about a report card then we would do good in school. So we never had those moments of congratulations, you're doing well. Or if we had awards, I don't know why I bring them home because they're not going to applaud us like that when parents, is that something parents are supposed to do? Because you would think being a mother, you should have these motherly instincts to love on your children. So, I mean, now I can say, I know she didn't have it because her mother didn't give it. So it's like a generational thing. And it took a long time. I mean, a very long time to get where I am today. And like I said, you know, when I got married, followed the pattern of being in an abusive marriage for 14 years. Even when I was in that marriage, it was hard for me to talk about my husband made me have an abortion. Never had an abortion in my life. Told me, we can't afford you kids. You better get it done. And when I had it done, you better buy your own medicine. I'm like, wow, no, you know, how are you feeling? No hug, no I love you. I'm so sorry. None of that. It was like I was just nothing to him, you know, abuse. It was a pattern, but I had to wake up and finally say enough is enough. I did not want my children to see me go through this the same way I saw my mother, and I didn't want to end up dying. Because who knows, this time could have been my last. And I didn't want them to be in foster care the same way I was. So, you know, God put people in my life to save my life. And I tell anybody that. Yes, ma'am.
And so you see, it helps so much when we have our children. You know, it does. It really mm-hmm. does, because, you know, it gives us, if we're able to, if we're not so mm-hmm. damaged, we're able to, you know, give them love, and they become so important to us. You know, they're a big part of mm-hmm. our lives. And, you know, not everyone's a perfect parent. Not everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, mm-hmm. it certainly does give us, you know, it gives us something to live for, you know, to have
yeah.
your children. And you probably mm-hmm. feel the same way. You love your children so much that you certainly, you mentioned that you thought about, you know, suicide quite a bit. And
mm-hmm.
there's so many of us, you know, that fall into that, because what is the sense in living during those times? Because
mm-hmm.
you're being so abused, like you said. And there's people all around you. They're all around you. You know, the people in the schools and the churches and all this, and they're making some or making comments, and still in all, you know, like nothing is really like being done. And,
yeah.
you know, it's very, very difficult to grow up like that. And I can identify with that. Absolutely. Let me go back to Bill and see if he has a comment to make.
Well, thinking about what you just said, I agree that, you know, there was a huge, there was like the universe shifted when I saw my daughter, you know, when she was born. The universe just shifted, and I had no
mm-hmm.
idea that it would be that big of a deal. You know, I was going to be happy to be a father. I kind of knew that, but boy, I was so happy to be a father. It was amazing. I had a shape shift, you know,
yeah.
as a person. And I adored Ashley and still do. So, yeah, that is a huge, makes a huge difference. For me, it did anyway, Cal. You know,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It probably makes a difference to me because the children came along after I sobered up, as opposed to before, you know, while I'm still drinking and using and suffering. That probably makes a difference, I think. But, you know, my daughter will never see me drunk. She's never seen me even smoke a joint, you know.
Yeah.
And believe me, I've smoked a lot of joints.
All right, listen.
But anyway, that did make a huge difference, Carol. It did, really did.
Yeah, yeah. Somehow then you see beyond your own nose. Excuse me, hold on. and your own feelings, because, you know, a lot of times we're so wrapped up in ourselves and how we feel. And, you know, look, when you've been beaten like a maniac and all this other stuff and abused and neglected and all that, you're going to feel bad, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Hold on a second. This is my throat this time. Oh, my God. Okay. I don't want to do that in your ear. So anyway, the point is we understand all this because we've been there. You know, so many of us have been there where, you know, where we had all those feelings that you're talking about. And this
yeah.
is why we say that, you know. But let's go to Penelope. I've got to recover my throat here. I've been on the phone all day. I think that's why. Go ahead, Penelope, go ahead.
Thank you. I will, you know, agree. I think even before I had kids, I just knew, and I was lucky in that the lady that lived next door, I think she heard a lot. And I call her my other mother. And this is from the time I was 7 or 8 years old. I had somebody that showed me unconditional love, but I observed their family and how she raised her kids. And like you had said, you kind of knew something was off. With the way you were treated, and I knew that there was a better way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always wanted to have kids because I wanted to make sure that I had never treated my children the way that I was treated. So it was just the subject of children and the goal to have children that really helped me through it, not saying that it was easy, not saying that I didn't experience severe, you know, emotional pain because of what I went through, or that I didn't try my own, and I know this is a topic that Bill brought up, but I didn't try my own ways of numbing. I think that's a very common thing to do, when, especially when you're a child, even when you're an adult, just, you know, because it is a difficult thing. It's just such a hard thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the numbing definitely was there, but I always had that that goal, and I really think it takes to the side of the children, just having that dream of being able to raise my children in a way that I never got, right? It really saved me. It really, truly did. So I agree with that. But I, as hearing you, coming back to you, you really had, even though you cut yourself, thank God you didn't hit an artery that would have been fatal. I don't know if that was intentional or not, if that was God, you know, the work of something greater than yourself, where you just, I don't know, right? You just did not go that far. I think I sense though, and I hear in what you're saying, that you really did have this will to move forward in a better way, you know, that you needed something better to heal, to go through that process. I hear that in you, and obviously you are, and you have been. And I know it's been a long road for you, but I hear it in you, and so I want to just thank you for sharing what you shared. But, yeah, the kid thing, I definitely, you know, that rings true for me as well. I can relate.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. You know, so many of us display our feelings of remorse and so forth, all the things that we feel as we're children who are being abused. And it comes out in all different ways. There's so many things that, like with teenagers who are being abused, many times they become bulimic or anorexic, or they're cutters, like you were talking about. You know, I don't know if you actually meant to cut through your vein or not. I did. I have a nice little scar on my wrist. I'd had enough, okay? And like you had said earlier, you felt like you didn't want to live anymore because, you know, like, what's the point? You know, I'm just going to get hit some more and all this other stuff, whatever. Or I'm going to get sexually abused, because that went on for some years, because the proper steps were not taken in your case. And so often that is the case with so many of us right here on this show, okay, myself included. So, you know, you go through all of these things, and then you turn into the alcohol and drugs. I started drinking when I was 13. By the time I was 16, I was a full-fledged alcoholic, and I was also popping Quaaludes. I shouldn't be here, honey. They're both downers, okay? So, you know, it's amazing, you know, what we do because we don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we're children. We're just kids. And today they don't, you know, again, we have more people who are more in tune with, you know, what kids go through who are being abused. But not enough care.
Yeah.
They don't do their job. They don't report as much as they should, or they fall through the cracks when they do report. There's just so many things that make the system, say, even imperfect. And but as long as we, the people, you know, do our job to report, you know, when you know someone's being abused, at least we've done what we can do, okay? So I'm sorry that no one was there for you. I'm sorry for all of us, you know, that there was no one there for, because we had to learn to deal with it. How old were you when you realized that, maybe you don't want to tell me. You don't want to tell me how old you are now. But, like, when did you realize that, that, you know, it wasn't normal what you were going through?
I don't know if I'm telling you my age. I'm 48. I know I sound like I'm 12, but I'm 48.
Well, maybe 14. Soon. 14. Go ahead. Go ahead. I'm teasing. Go ahead.
That's okay. Let's see. I knew it at a young age because I want to say about 7 or 8, because when we go to school and I would see parents with their children and kids would come and tell me how they had a good time with their mom, dad, and travel, and they hug them and kiss. And I'm like, I don't have none of that. What? And I'm like looking at them, is that the norm thing to do? Because we never had that. So it was very young for me when I realized it wasn't normal. Because I used to dream, and I'm going to make you laugh, I always thought I was adopted. I told God, where to bring my real parents? Because ain't no way these my parents, and they're beating on us like this. And that's why most of the time I ran away, because I thought I was going to find my real parents, and I thought I was adopted. So when you get like that, you get in your own little world and think of, you know, seeing things on TV. That was me. That was my life. Running around with roses and, you know, singing and stuff. And reality hit when you get hit upside the head. So, yeah, that was my world. And that's what I was
thinking. Because I ran away, too. And, geez, that background, I don't know what the heck that is, but it's kind of rough. But anyway, when I used to run away, I was told to run away, and I wanted to anyway, okay? Where did you run to? I ran to the streets. Where'd you go?
Yeah, I did too. The first time I ran away, I was, eight or nine. Yeah, I think it was eight or nine, because by then we had went back, like I said, to my mother, and we were still getting abused. So I ran to the streets. I was trying to get, to be honest, to my grandmother. You know that lady in life? I'd rather be with her than be with my mom. And she lived in South Carolina at the time. So I was trying to get a bond or anything I could to get to her. So by the grace of God, nobody snatched me up, you know, did other things to me. So they found me, and I ended up back home.
Yeah, well, it's you know, it's rough out on the streets, but I was treated better out on the street than I was at home because I was young. Yeah, and they took care of me out on the street, and once in a while I'd go back home. They knew people had a car, and they'd take me back home. And I'd run in the house, I'd steal stuff, steal clothing, steal my own clothing, right? I just realized what I just said. But, you know, I went down the basement, and there was a laundry down there, so I was able to get stuff. And I'd steal food out of the kitchen, you know, to take back out to my friends on the street. And, you know, so I'd do that periodically. And but I would stay home when it was winter. See, I had it better than most because I was able to go back home. It's just that I didn't want to be home, and they didn't want me home. So, you know, and I knew what I was going back to, didn't I? Just like with you, okay?
Yeah.
And, you know, you said something that is so freaky, and I'll tell you why it's freaky. When I was around 12, between 12 and 14, I was passing around that I was adopted too.
Oh, wow.
And it got back to my mother, okay? It got back to my mother. And I was, you know, I had a lot of friends in high school and so forth before high school, you know, like eighth grade up.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it got back to one of the little girls' mother that was a lie, and then she wasn't allowed to play with me anymore because I was a liar, see? But it's funny how the mind... Yeah, it's okay. I had other friends, but it's funny how the mind works, because I didn't want to be a part of that family, and I didn't feel a part of that family, so I too said the same thing, that I was adopted. It's funny. So yeah. So now Bill, he was adopted, and he talks about it all the time. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, and he was fortunate enough to, you know, find a good family. You know, every family has problems, but the point is this.
Yeah.
He was in a good family. So go ahead and tell us more about your you got out of your teenage years. You were cutting. You did turn to alcohol and drugs. You were on the street. You did it several times where you ran away. Where did you meet your husband? Your first, were you married once or twice, honey?
Once. My mother's hometown, so the reason I came here at the time when I had my daughter, her asthma was real bad, so the south weather was better for her, and it kept her out of the hospital. So when we moved here, that's when I met him. But let me back up a minute, because before I came to South Carolina, when I turned 1920, I was raped by my pastor's son. A lot of people didn't believe me because, of course, when you're in church, they don't want to talk about it, and there's no way this person can do that to you because the pastor's son, which is not always true. So, you know, church can like pull up stuff, and I hate to say it, it's the truth. But to be honest, the church that I was against, the only reason it came out, because I got my pool and I told my mother at the time, and that's how that came out, and they found out I was the only one he raped. It was several other women he raped as well. So that's why, too, I left part of that, because I was ashamed and embarrassed, and I couldn't believe we grew up as kids that he would do something like that. So, and to this day, his mother's passing on, but she apologized, and I'm like, you didn't have to apologize, because you didn't do it. But I loved her enough because she felt bad. And some mothers don't care. Some mothers don't believe that my son can't do that. But she did, and she knew that she apologized, and I love her, you know, to this day that she did that. And so that's how I ended up here, met her, my ex-husband. We was together, and when I met him, sweet man, you know, that charm they put on you, and all the looking good, and, you know, take out to dinner, and things, you know, the same stuff I try to pull and make it seem like they're all good. But when that ring down that thing, all hell was like a whole different man. So he got me. Abortion, you know, thing on me, and calling me everything but a child of God, and, you know, saying it was just awful. And I just couldn't handle that no more. You know, they say, well, my parents was like, well, because you got a man, you have no. I mean, it took every courage in me. We went to counseling. He had his own issues. Mm-hmm. Come to find out, he had an abuse himself. Never knew nothing about that before we got married. And to this day, I recommend counseling before you get married. I'm learning that now. I never had it. I would never marry him, but I can honestly say that the things that I went through was for me. It's for me now. You know, it's part of my own son. But the reason that for him, I don't trust that anymore.
That's painful, isn't it? Yes, it is. I can hear the tone of your voice. I can't hear everything that you're saying because the can you hear Bill? Penelope, can you hear?
No, she's dipped down a little bit now.
Yeah.
You know, she's
gotten quieter. Yeah, I wasn't sure if it was phone or you know, going in and out or not. So, which it could be because my phone's been very temperamental since I got back from Europe. So. A little bit of breaking up, I heard. But I heard most of it. I got most of it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm getting it, too, in, like, bits and pieces. And I did change phones before I started, you know, this show because I was on the phone all day. But anyway, all right, so it's very painful, all right, when we get married, we think we're madly in love and all this other stuff. And then you go through a marriage that is, you know, not what you thought it was going to be, okay?
Yeah.
And, you know, it breaks the spirit, too. It just simply does. Because you think, all right, I found my, how do they say it, knight in white and shiny armor? I can't say it. Anyway, the answer to my problems, man. Okay, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, but then what happens is, that person becomes your problem, too. So here you are trying to learn about yourself, how to absorb properly, you know, what happened to you. And that's a terrible thing. That's not easy to do. You have to do that, you know, with a counselor. and you know, and try to deal with all the abuse, How do you handle it? Do you have a lot of anger issues today, or are you a sad person? How would you describe yourself today?
So today, I don't have any anger or hate anymore. When that died, because it's not my benefit. It helped me move forward.
Can you hold your phone a little different, maybe, or something? I don't know what's going on here, but I can't hear you. It's getting really bad. And you have such a compelling story. All right. Well, I don't know. It doesn't sound. I'm having a hard time hearing you. But anyway, all right. I get the gist of what you're saying. Don't ever question yourself. Okay. I'm not saying that people shouldn't look backwards and examine themselves and think about, well, maybe I could have done this a little bit differently. I don't mean when you were growing up and getting beaten. I don't mean that. But I'm speaking about, like, in the marriages, okay? Because I got married twice, like I said. Now, my first husband, right before he passed away, my son found him online, and he called him. And he actually apologized for his behavior towards me, said that I was a very good wife, and he apologized to my son and his sister, and he said, you were good kids. He said, it was me. Well, wow. How often does that happen? Okay. So he sort of like redeemed himself, but there were a lot of years there where there was so much struggle when there shouldn't have been, okay? He, too, I found out later on, because I think I heard you say something. Later on, I found out that he had been sexually abused at the age of 11. And, yeah. Now, that doesn't give anyone the excuse, all right, to treat other people poorly, okay? Right. But he had his own issues. He had his own issues, okay, and which never got addressed. He went to his grave that way. Actually, he gave his body to science. Oh, my God. I don't know about that. But anyway, that's what he decided to do. Our son seems funny, doesn't it? But he was such an alcoholic. I don't even know what part of him would be good. I don't know. We won't go there. But, yeah. So we were like drinking buddies. See, this is what happens. You get in with people. And we have a magnet for each other, so it appears, you know. And we attract each other. And you have to learn after you stop drinking with alcoholism. You have to learn how to live life, okay, by yourself. You don't have that crutch anymore. And you don't have that, you have to learn to live life. Now, let me tell you something. It's not an easy thing to do, okay, because everything I had done, even some of the jobs that I had, I would wait until the sun went down. Then it was my time, honey, okay? And my kids never saw me drunk either, okay? They never even see me. They never even saw me drink. I made sure of that. So I was a functioning alcoholic, okay? That's what that is. That's a functioning alcoholic. So, but I was still an alcoholic. So I had to come to, terms with my fingers swelling and my kidneys pounding, which helped me make up my mind not to drink anymore, okay? That I have a problem. I detoxed myself, which was very dangerous. And what I did was I stayed home for 3 days from work. I put my kids in a safe place. And I didn't know what was going to happen, but I did it anyway. And then I had to go back to work. A whole new me, and I didn't know who me was. All right, holy Christopher. Because when you turn your life over to alcohol and drugs, you're not your real, genuine self, you know. You've put so many bandages on, so many band-aids like you were talking about before. you know, on the wounds, whether they be physical or not, or whether they be emotional wounds, that, you know, you don't know exactly who you are. You have to get in touch with who you are as a person. Now, I think you understand what I'm saying there, because you had lived a life in such a way that you went from childhood abuse to then also being abused, you know, through your first marriage, your marriage, and so forth. So are you married today or not?
I'm single. I've been single for...
You see, I can't hear what you're saying. Did you say yes or no?
I said no.
Oh, okay. Okay. It doesn't matter. Okay. As long as you can, you know, provide for your children, you know, it's better sometimes, you know, you're in counseling, you're in for therapy, and that's a good thing, because before a person jumps into another relationship, so often we have trouble in relationships. That's just another thing that goes with child abuse, and it goes into adulthood, okay? And so, like, if I were to get married tomorrow, it'd be my third time. I'm never getting married again. I don't want to, all right? I saw enough, all right? So, and my kids are grown, so I don't have to worry about it. But the point is, I wouldn't want to get married again. I've gotten to know myself. I think you say here in your bio that today you do love yourself. Every day is a fight to stay alive, because you still can go backwards. I understand that we all can, you know, in our thought process. But you always know, too, that it was never your fault. You do know that. Correct?
Yes, I do.
And it says here, God put people in my life to keep me motivated and push me out of my comfort zone. Okay? And every day is a fight to stay alive. But I push through it every day through grace and mercy and God. And of course, now you are an advocate. And that's wonderful, because the story that you told, and I did hear most of it, but it'll come through, I think, probably on the archives better. I certainly hope so. But with all the counseling that you had, you came probably to know yourself better. Okay, and that's so, so, so important. And none of us are perfect, Nikita. I mean, even to this day, none of us are perfect. But one thing we do have to try to stay away from is going backwards in our memories. And, you know, we should have good memories. You said something way back in the beginning when I could hear you well. You said when you were like 7 or 8 years old, you realized that things were not right, okay? Because I asked you, when did you become aware of the fact that your life was different, say, than other kids? And what you said was around 7 or 8, because they were going on vacations, they were out with their parents, you could see that they were happy. And you see, I was like a people watcher, because I never had boundaries, I never had anyone to teach me, you know, what's right, what's wrong. And we didn't go on vacations either, or the normal things, you know, the kids would do. In the summertime, there wasn't any of that. So, you know, we can go back to those times in our life, and we can explore those times a little bit, but know that it's not right. And, you know, 70% of people do not abuse their children who have been abused, not sexually, okay? And 30% do. And as far as the physical is concerned, the stats are higher on that, okay? But you know, I can tell by your talking, the way you speak about your children, that you have a lot of love. You say also in your bio that no one ever said that they loved you. A lot of us go through that, okay? Now, there's some people that are very, you know, loving and jovial and all this other stuff. That's the way I am. But then you have family members who are total opposite, but that you know that they love their children. They take good care of them, and those kids do know that they're loved. One way or another, they're shown that they're loved. And then you have, you know, the third category where kids don't hear it, when they're growing up. Yeah. And you and I and all those other people in NASCA and other organizations and so forth who never had the proper nurturing that we needed as a child, okay, we know that it's right for us to praise our children when they do something well, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We know that it's right to say, I love you. There's nothing wrong with that. Kids need to hear that. We know that it's we take good care of them, make sure they have clean clothing, they have food, you know, and certainly never to hit our child or to sexually abuse them. We know this. And these are just the normal things in life, you know. But we had to, you know, look back at our lives and come to the realization it was never our fault, ever. And, you know, that we have to treat our children better. Because children don't ask to be born, do they? No, they don't.
No. Mm-mm.
No, they don't. And so the very least that we can do, and it's not a small job, but we should be, you know, the best parent or parents to our children. One thing I want to say here is we have to worry about, you know, someone like you and myself, all right, because we are, you know, we don't have the husbands. But a lot of times women are desperate or something, I don't know. And the next, they go out with guys and they have, you know, a lot of boyfriends and stuff like that. And then they settle down, you know, maybe not get married, but, you know, he becomes the intimate partner. He's in the house, all right?
Yeah.
And you have to watch out because, and I'm saying this to everyone who's listening, because the stats are going up on this. Those type of people, so often you think that they're in love with you, okay? And they might really want your kids, all right?
Yes.
Is that going on? And then also, too, they can be volatile towards your children. So, you know, next time you really do, maybe you should do background checks. I'm starting to think women should do background checks on the guys they go out with.
So
you know,
true.
I think so. Because they can present themselves so well, can't they? They can be very charming.
Mm-hmm.
They can pull a chair out for you when you go out to a restaurant with them. They can buy you little gifts and you know, do nice things for you. And inside, they're not really that way at all. So it's best maybe to do background checks because, you know, we have been damaged.
Yes.
All right, we've been damaged. And sometimes, you know, if someone gives us a lot of attention, we want that attention because we didn't get it when we were children. You didn't get it. I didn't get it. You know, a lot of people didn't get it, and
that's right.
We don't know how to choose that. We don't know how to choose properly.
And you're right,
so,
because I never had that growing up.
Yeah.
My mother never
it
taught me how
right
to choose. Yeah.
Well, when you were speaking earlier, when I could really hear you, and you said, now, I don't know if this was in foster care or if this was at your house, because you were starting to break up a little bit, but you were made to eat something and it made you nauseous and you threw up, and rather than to get hit again, you swallowed your own vomit. Now that's a horrific, horrific thing. Okay, for a child to have to do. Now, were you in foster care at that point, or were you home yet? What was going on with that?
I was still in foster care at the time.
That was in foster care. Okay.
Yes. Mhm.
Yeah. And my God, how awful is that? I'm going to go back to Bill and have him make a comment and then also to Penelope. And we have an 843 area code here, too. Let me open up this mic. Area code 843, who am I speaking to? This is Carol Levine from the Stop Child Abuse Now show.
This is me. I was changing another number because I didn't know if it was my phone.
Oh.
I was having issues.
Oh, okay. Well, hello, you. Okay. That's funny. Okay. Well, it's not coming from your phone. I don't know what's going on. But anyway, my phone I know is all right because I changed it to make sure. And Penelope said that I think had said, I don't know what's going on. But anyway, the point is this. when you go through that awful abuse and to have to eat your own vomit, you know, to swallow it, so you, because you're so afraid that you're going to be beaten, that's a horrific thing. Bill, go ahead and comment. Bill, are you there?
Yeah,
well, his mic is open.
I've never had to do that, and frankly, it sounds pretty disgusting.
yeah.
You know, I mean, people come up with the strangest punishments for children. I guess they think that they're doing something good for the child because the child has to learn somehow, you know. but I don't think that's the way to do it. And that's just, you know, I can't believe somebody would do that to you. So, no.
Yeah. It's I've heard this before. And, you know, a lot of times it's a form of punishment, too. They'll, what's the vegetable that kids don't like the most? Lima beans, right? Okay. You know, I mean, I could see someone, you know, putting a whole plate load of lima beans down if they wanted to be nasty to the kid, all right, to the child, and insist that they eat it. And if the child is nauseous while eating it, they can, you know, do just as Nikita did, you know, and throw up in their mouth. And in her case, she was so frightened because she didn't want to get beat anymore that she swallowed it. Let's go to Penelope.
Yeah.
Yeah. Penelope, what do you have to say about that?
You know, I have to say that I just want to give you a big hug. You're 48 and I'm 50. I'm going to give you a hug as if we're both little girls, right? Who had to do perfect things to survive. I mean, it just breaks my heart that you know, you live in that type of fear. Because I certainly know what it is like to live in that kind of fear and just be willing to do whatever it takes, right, to try and, you know, ward off any, you know, violence that may come our way as children.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do things like throwing up our own vomit because, you know, we know that actually vomiting and not swallowing it will be worse than swallowing
yeah.
it. You know, for me, we weren't allowed to eat food. I was starving. And I knew that if I ate food, because my mother wanted to be really thin. She was she had her own issues. And so I knew I had to be thin. So I was, you know, probably from the time I was 4 or 5 years old, I starved myself. I was emaciated because
wow.
that meant that I would be, like, loved, right, and not punished. So, yeah, we'll do what it takes, and it just breaks my heart because I know how painful that is, and I know how painful it is to go through the hand process and have to address all that, right? That's horrific. You had
yeah.
to, you know, live in that kind of fear that you had to resort to that as a child. So, but I also just, you know, this was a little bit ago in the show, but I didn't comment on it, which was wishing that you were... maybe adopted from, you know, that, you know, maybe, you know, you know, that you'd have different parents. Well, I didn't wish that, but I was the oldest of three, and I always wished growing up, like, my fantasy was to have an older brother. And I realized that because I just felt like someone could protect me. You know, I didn't realize that until I was healing. But, yeah, you know, I wished for a different family structure because, to me, that was just a fantasy, too, to escape. I got the brunt of the abuse. I was the oldest, you know. I think that's maybe why. So, yeah, I mean, I, you know, and hearing that, like, my heart does break. You know, you have the fantasy to want someone to adopt you or have a different family, but it's also like think about all the things that kids can fantasize about, right? A pony or whatever
yeah.
the stereotypical fantasy is. Like, we fantasize for a safe home environment.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, I just... I can relate to so much of what you're saying, and I'm just getting a big hug from Bellevue, Washington, and you're just
oh,
not
thank
alone.
You.
You're welcome.
Back at you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There you go. Yeah. I'm sitting here thinking that with my mother, because I had a mother issue too, she adored my brother. He could do no wrong. And he was a pedophile. And they spent lots and lots and lots of money to keep him out of jail. We'll just leave it at that. But the golden boy, we had this person on, who told her story about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I guess it was. And she referred to her brother as the golden boy. So I'm stealing that. So if you're listening, thank you. I like that, the golden boy. But now he was 5 years older than me, okay? And he would make terrible messes in the house, whether it was in the kitchen, making himself snacks. I wasn't allowed to have snacks. He was allowed to have snacks. He'd make, and I swear to God, he would do his best to make the biggest, baddest mess that he could. And then I was supposed to clean up after him. You know, I got mad. I mean, yeah. Why should I clean up after him? He's 5 years older than me. Well, if I dare voice to my opinion, that's when my mother would start to switch me, okay? She allowed for me to pick my own switch. Wasn't that nice of her? Oh, my.
Yes, I can understand that.
Yeah. So I learned as time went by that if the switch had brown in it, that meant that the switch was half dead, right? So if it hit me in a wood, it wasn't going to hurt quite as much. Well, the welts that I was getting on my legs weren't quite as big, were they, or quite as red? So she looked at the switch, and she realized what I was doing, so I wasn't allowed to pick my own switch anymore. So I just kept my mouth shut then because she caught on. And, I didn't want to be switched anymore either. So I understand exactly what you're saying. So I just cleaned the mess. Yeah.
And, like you said, being beaten all in the time, and then when I went to go pick my switch, I would pick, the one, a little real skinny stick, but I don't know why, because when she started hitting us and it would break, you got to go get another one.
So
it kept going and going and going. She beat us one time in a bathtub full of water. We got our hair wet. Kids playing in the tub. So we didn't know no better. So she got the extension cord, started beating us in the tub with the extension cord while we was in the water. And that hurts even more. And that left bigger welts on our body.
Mm-hmm. That's terrible. I know. Well, I go back and forth thinking, all right, sexual abuse is awful. God forbid. I was so sexually abused as a child, not just by my brother, okay? Mm-hmm. But physical abuse, that's awful bad too, all right?
Yeah.
And I don't know which leaves a bigger scar on a kid, because physical abuse before I got married, because it was physically abused also with that too. But as a child, I'm thinking back to what you were saying. When you're physically abused by people who are supposed to nurture you and love you, and you need to hear those words, I love you. Hey, you're doing a good job. All those things that people need, okay?
Yeah.
And you don't get them. Well, what the heck, you go into terrible depression. And I know that I certainly went through terrible depression. And the physical abuse, that was awful bad, too, for the mind and for the body and for the soul.
Mm-hmm.
But, and you know what I mean by that.
Later on in life. Yeah. It messes with you later on in life. That's why I didn't realize why I couldn't remember a lot of things when I got older. I was reminded because all the trauma inside my head growing up. That's why I couldn't remember things. And people was like, why you can't remember nothing? I just told you. It was so bad, I would forget my kids at school.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew something was wrong. And you could just tell me something and that quickly, I couldn't remember.
Yeah. That's a concentration problem. Yeah. And that's very, very common with you know, kids who are abused. They have trouble concentrating. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I went through that, too. I think all of us go through that, you know, a certain period of time, you know, through your life, they do have trouble concentrating. Now they're doing studies. Oh, you're all going to love this one. They're doing studies where those of us who have been abused, does that help bring on Alzheimer's? All right? They're actually doing a study on that.
Mm.
And from what they can see, the Alzheimer's is more prevalent amongst those of us who have been, you know, abused. Okay? And I go all over the web, you know, I go all over the place. I find all kinds of stuff. And so these are studies that are being done. So we live shorter lives, supposedly. I don't know if that's true or not, but we live shorter lives. But, well, maybe it does make sense because we're more prone to have physical ailments. Okay, this is true. You can have, like, I had terrible panic attacks. I had panic disorder. Okay? Mm-hmm. And I didn't even want to leave the house. I had agoraphobia also, you know. It turns into that, you know. And so I went through a period of that. But I always tease because I like to shop, too. Okay? So I wanted to get out of the house, and I wanted to go into the stores. It was like a battle, you know. And finally, I got rid of it. Believe me, I did it on my own. And it's not just mind over matter. I just got so angry that this was controlling me so, okay, controlling me so. And so, you know, yeah. And so, you know, it's I started having panic attacks when I was 9, and they lasted until I was 49. That's a long time.
Yes.
So I just got so mad that I think my head almost burst because I was saying all kinds of things in my head in a store where I was having a panic attack. And I did that 3 times, and all of a sudden my panic was gone. It was like my anger was worse than my panic, okay? And it worked. I don't know. Don't ask me. I can't tell you. I can only tell you that that's what happened. And at one time, I would never have been on a talk radio show. Played this for 11 years. And, you know, and I wouldn't be able to stand up and do presentations. No way. Because I couldn't stand people looking at me. This is what abuse does to children.
Yeah.
It comes out in all different forms. You know, I was so filled with anger that I would get into terrible fights in school. I won most of them, not all of them, but I the point is I had trouble, you know, at times, you know, with kids in school because they were always bullies, a lot of bullies. And what we need to do is look into the house of the bullies. Where are they coming from? They take their anger out on the street. They take their anger out in school. And a lot of damage can be done from that, too, from being bullied. But I always had a certain amount of friends in high school. I was lucky. And, of course, we were all misfits, all right? The whole bunch of us came from homes that were terribly dysfunctional, one way or another. I think I was the only one being sexually abused. Physically, yes, but sexual also. The others were physical. So, I mean, we all stuck and clung together. And we lived our lives together. To this day, I'm still in, very much in tune with one of the 5 girls that I hung out with to this day. And, and one of them passed away about 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks ago now. Yeah, she passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. But you see, when you go through all this terrible dysfunction, like you've mentioned all throughout this article I have here, the bio, and the things that you're saying, the terrible depression, the wanting to commit suicide, and all these other things that you were speaking about, the feeling of not feeling loved, and we know what that feels like. That's a very bad feeling. I'm sure today that with your children, you give them adequate love. You're able to, because somewhere in our heart, we know, you know, what's right, what's wrong. We come to know this, okay? And, you know, at our age now, I'm much older than you, but the point is you came to realize this, and I'm sure you're probably a very good mother. Now, you have, like, 2 or 3 minutes left. Tell
mm-hmm.
us, you know, you say that you're an advocate today. Is that
mm-hmm.
for people who call you, or do you go out and do things? What do you do?
Yes, and real quick, with the mother, it took me a while to learn how to love my children because I never had that. And as a mother, you think you'll have that instinct. No,
mm-hmm.
it took me some counseling and some help because I needed that. I never had it to give it to my children. So with the counseling,
mm-hmm.
it helped me to learn how to hug on my girls, tell them I love them, because I never knew what to do. I didn't know how to portray that to my babies, and it was hard.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just being real and honest. Some people say, yeah, it was hard for me because I never had it as a mother.
I understand. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
And for an advocate, yes, ma'am, I went back to school. I was in the medical field for 25 years. I went back to school to get my bachelor's in criminal justice. So I was a guardian ad litem. And now I am an LLC. I have a business and advocate and counseling and consulting. I'm sorry. I speak for those who don't have a voice. So no matter the age, creed, color, whatever's going on, I'm the person that speaks up for anybody that help in nursing home, foster care. When you don't have a voice or your family members are not there to help you or support you, I am that person because nobody was there for me and nobody was there for a lot of other people now. So that's what I do. I'm making sure you get the adequate care in need that you need, placed in the homes where you need to be placed, that your voice is heard. So, because sometimes children are still scared to talk. Adults are still scared to talk. So I'm going to be the one that has that voice. Make sure you're being taken care of properly. Make sure that you're not being abused. Make sure you're not being overlooked in these nursing homes, hospitals, foster care homes. And make sure that you're getting the care that you need and that you're getting what everybody else that is getting who is paying thousands of dollars. People that are not have the money are treated badly. It doesn't matter who they are, and in the foster care home. So that's who I am. I am that person. I also have a foster care group on Facebook called Foster Care Survivors, Breaking the Silence of Abuse. So I'm really out there trying to help others, you know, get
what
they
need. You're doing a wonderful job.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
thank you. So they don't have to be out here in the streets. And I'm tired of aged out foster care children on the streets. Don't have nowhere to go. So I have
another
organization called Deborah's House of Hope. I'm in the process now looking for a building so we can get that fixed out so they can have somewhere to stay, get the proper training
mm-hmm.
that they need before they leave out of foster care and on these streets, learn how to pay bills. They don't give them enough money to survive.
Good.
That's why a lot of them are committing suicide, even with them going into the services. They never get the counseling
mm-hmm.
that they need before they go out here on their own to understand,
mm-hmm.
okay, this is how to be an adult. This is how to pay bills. So that's what I'm here to do because we never
well,
had
that's
it.
Wonderful.
So I'm trying to change that in laws.
That's
mm-hmm.
wonderful because you so often when a kid turns a certain age, they push them out on the street and they don't know what the
yes.
heck to do. They, like you said, they can't even write a check. They don't know how to pay bills and all this other stuff. They don't know how to take care of themselves. You are a NASCA
yes.
family member now. Yes, you are. And please
oh, thank
do call
you.
In. Yeah, you can be the one on the panel asking the questions. How's that?
Oh, wow. Thank you. I love it.
yeah. And then also, too, you know, the things that you just mentioned at the end, it's not in the bio. I had no idea. I'd like to talk to you again. Maybe Bill would like to talk to you again. You could talk about what you do with, you know, in the foster care and get more in depth with that, maybe on a different night or something.
Mm-hmm.
So please do
sure.
keep in touch, okay?
Yes,
and thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much, you know, for coming on the show. You are a wonder. You're a Wonder Woman. That's what you are. And
thank you.
Yes. And so I'm just going to have to end the show now because I'm getting this cue in my ear that the show is over. But please
well,
don't forget
NASCA. Wonderful show. Thank you very much for being here. Thank
you guys for having me.
We were delighted, and please come back. Yes.
Rock star. Total rock star.
Most definitely. Thank you guys.
You're wonderful. All right. Thank you, sweetheart. Good night. God bless everyone out there. And watch your back and watch your neighbor's back, too. Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.